Hello to the listeners of the Michael Anthony Show podcast. I appreciate you tuning in. It's good to talk to you. It's been a while since I spoke to you last. And yeah, at this point, that's not just a habit of the show, but unfortunately, the identity of the show. And speaking of identities, mine is quite hard to locate currently. I don't know who I am. I don't know who I love. And I don't seem to be capable of any form of positive emotional reception. And I think that one of the reasons that we haven't heard the Michael Anthony Show. I mean, what a show, though. Eh? Jesus. But one of the reasons is because after that evening, I shared with Pete Doherty, in which he sat down, and I mean, for me, Pete Doherty isn't a musician. I mean, like all kind of fanatics of anything, we like to pretend that they're spiritual guides. I chose to delude myself into thinking that he was in order to bring myself from confused boy to what I thought was a free-thinking man. But after we sat down, I mean, not just what a performer, what a man. First guest I've ever had on the show who walked in and lit a cigarette indoors without asking, and I just, Jesus. Why would he ask? Why does anyone ask anyone for anything? You live and you die, so. But when we went there and embraced, and he whipped out the harmonica to the little song that I wrote as a younger man. And then afterwards, when he mentioned the show on stage to an audience in my hometown of Dublin City, you there? Dublin City, huh? It didn't give me the feelings I thought it would give me when it was all said and done. The day after, the week after, I wasn't as euphoric as I should have been. I wasn't as ecstatic. As a guy should be when his hero validates his creative output on the show that he made up under a fake name. Hate to be the bearer of bad news, but there is no Michael Anthony. He's an idea. Idea created by a much weaker man than Michael Anthony in order to avoid the reality and the mirror that that weaker man had to look into every single day that was full of trauma, regret, and angst. So Michael Anthony was the Übermensch, as Nietzsche would say. But you pay a price for that down the line, because then you don't get to enjoy the genuine positive emotions of meeting the hero of the real character behind the mythical character you've created. So yeah, identity crisis began and is ongoing. So much so that I've quite clearly considered pulling the plug on the fucking Michael Anthony Show. Let's be fucking frank here. So many beautiful human beings have given their time and their heart and their honesty and their authenticity to Michael Anthony's listeners. Yet, I still can't seem to bring myself to fall back in love with this project because there's a personal element to it that I'm either refusing to take responsibility for or avoiding for some reason. And I think it's for that reason that I also don't possess a production team necessarily. I mean, we've gone there in the past and there's been some great men who've helped out the project along the way, but I mean, what am I doing with this show, guys, really? Come on. And I know a lot of the listeners have got on regularly and said, oh, it should be this, and we know that. I don't know how many kind of fat paddies David Chase has spoken to, you know, it's not, but there's possibly just too little self-love to bring it to where it needs to be. So that isn't an open-ended kind of invitation for help, you know, if I've done that. I've had the odd listener. I'm trying to think they could solve the black hole that's sucking all the commercial motivation out of the show. But, I mean, if me and my minuscule community behind the MA show can organise fucking John C. McGinley and Brian Robson, do you not also think that we could organise a bit of fucking promotion on social media like the rest of the pricks in this game are doing? Of course we could, but maybe we're just too authentic to the point that we don't really see a point. But then that attitude also gets you to the stage in which you can't enjoy your hero coming on because you're kind of going, oh, well, like, it's just another MA show, really, isn't it? So in a pursuit of kind of the enigma character, I lost myself. And then the new character was lost because he wasn't really capable of joy. And then when I went back to look for the old bastard, forgotten who he fucking was because he wears sunglasses in an indoor setting, pretending he's a musician to Pete Doherty. So my advice to any of the kids out there, and there is some people who've asked for advice when it comes to kind of starting an internet production, don't do it. Because you end up in an emotional circle in which you give yourself quite a serious mental health problem in the name of a gag. But a few years go by, you wake up one morning with pruritus ani. It's the condition I now have. It means your arsehole essentially itches all day. Common in men over 40. I've been to 3 doctors about it, and every single one of them just wants to tell you to get the fuck out. No one likes treating the anus, and that's not really said in jest. None of them want to look at it, and they just think you're a dirty, embarrassing, fat bastard whose diet's so bad that he's obviously just passing unhealthy chemicals through his anus on such a consistent level that he's given himself this condition, and a lot of it's psychosomatic as well. A lot of the intense anal itching is self-hatred. But what I'm trying to say is this is where we're at. You wake up one day and there's an itchy arse, and you kind of, you turn your back on your friends, but then you kind of always knew they weren't really your friends. Then you ask yourself, why didn't I just say you were never my friends? You fucking don't know what's going on. And then you think, well, I just got the microphone back out again, though, and give it the biggin. But then it stops filling the void. So you just end up insane. Shit. But then you don't believe in help. Because part of the whole fucking game is that you know fucking everything. So no help with no mental stability. Hell. Or is it not heaven? Because life is kind of obscenely painful. It's unbelievably joyous, and we should try to make the best out of every waking moment, because it's very funny that we spend a portion of any of the blackness with consciousness and life. And yeah, that thought that maybe it's heaven is the reason I'm back on air, because as a relatively young man, I think taking on this level of pain is just me kind of wanting the best emotional drug there is. I think it comes to everyone. That's what life's about. Treat emotions as drugs. Do you fancy trying them all? Because this one's fucking strange. Isolation. Lack of certainty about who you are, but really fucking feeling it. It's a bit of an adrenaline to it. There's a bit of fucking excitement to it. And to quote once more Friedrich Nietzsche, who, by the way, ended up isolated and died a horrible death. Alone and mental. But to quote the mad bastard, who, by the way, shouldn't be quoted. I don't know why we are so addicted to. As Anthony Bourdain says, you need to go to Vietnam, you need to try the local food, you need to have a chat with the weirdest person in the bar. Yeah, he killed himself, though. A lot of the people we quote killed themselves. But as Nietzsche says, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, you know what I'm saying? So, yeah. No identity. Weird show. Fake name. So it didn't kill me. And unfortunately, possibly for future me, it's made me bastarding stronger. So, until the next time I lose it. Pete, thank you for coming on. Loved it. Love you. An elbow to cry on, a heart with no beat. You can't feed your soul when the world's got your teeth. Whoa, whoa, whoa. We'll always have that. We'll always have Portobello. And I'd like to think I'll always have my listeners. How we doing?
The sinking sand of despair, the smell of dread in the air. I'm head to toe in my own fear. I'm going to die, no need to cry. Ah.
Yeah, what do you want? A bit of conversation about the world. We may as well touch on the fact that Man City won the treble, but as anyone who follows the MA Show's Twitter account, might just start putting pictures of my dick on that. It's so pointless. It is. Twitter's now, I think, just openly allowed spread misinformation on it. Now, I know they have little features that go under, like, fucking medical or political claims, but in terms of sport, there's accounts on that thing that are essentially the 442 and telegraphs for the future generation that are just lying about years that shit happened and no one's questioning it. There might be one guy out of 100 saying didn't happen that year. What is the... No. So the truth, actually... The truth doesn't exist anymore. In kind of any walk of life, but I'm sure we know that. But, yeah. Anyone who's on there will know that I'm quite passionate about the fact that the treble no longer matters or exists. And this isn't just because Man City won it. I am anti-City. They don't repulse me nearly to the same extent as Liverpool do. Because growing up in Dublin, you just don't meet many City fans. And I think all those things are personal in a way. I mean, you can all root for the same values in a club. We all loved King Eric Cantona, one of the finest human beings who ever existed. We all remember Dennis Irwin's consistency and beauty. And we all like to think that Manchester United is one of the most romantic clubs in the world. But, I mean, where football's going now, the word romantic doesn't belong in it. But my point is that do leave the City hating to the genuine Mancunians. It's their thing. And they are responsible for the growth of Manchester United, regardless of the fact that a lot of them have Irish lineage. But if you grew up and your next door neighbour is hanging a picture of Curly Watts out his window, the City thing would annoy you a lot more. So I'm not going to go on a kind of anti-City rant as a United fan, but it's just due to the fact that the treble was won four times ever between 1956 and 2010. You had Jock Steens, Lisbon Lions, who all lived within 10 miles of the fucking stadium. Rangers fans, if there is any listening, will be quick to say that maybe, listen, he can win all the trebles he wants, but Big Jock knew about the sexual abuse scandals that took place at Celtic, and I'm not going to comment on that, but I do think the banners are quite humorous. I think a lot of the banners they bring to Celtic and Rangers games, how unlinked they are to the concept of these idiots trying to run around after a ball and kick it past a goalkeeper who they pretend is some martyr for blessing himself in front of the opposition fans. I think how unlinked the banners are sometimes are extremely funny. But to be 40 years post the time of allegation, and for a game of football to be going on between two teams from Glasgow, and for some man to bring a banner to a game and just hang it down, and that just says Big Jock now, because he's disgusted by how many leagues Jock Steen won, and the fact that Celtic have a treble and Rangers don't, and he just, his day out is he's just going to make that statement from the stand. Big Jock now. That's it. He goes home, folds up the flag and bounces. It's very funny, and football can sometimes get not just the filthiest, but some of the most humorous behaviour out of individuals. I saw recently, obviously when you're younger and you go to football matches for the first time, and you see the two cunts across the stand just pointing at each other for the whole game. He decides to go on a day out and he spends 90 minutes just pointing at a fucker. They're never going to see each other again, but I saw an interesting clip of them swapping numbers. Your man asks him for his number aggressively, the other guy mimes it with his hands, and he fucking calls him, and they continue the shouting, and I presume still didn't meet each other. But it's a funny game rooted in kind of working class irrationalities. But you've Jock Steen's Lisbon Lions. You have Johan Cruyff's Ajax of the 70s. You've Gus Hiddink's PSV side of the late 80s. Many people might be wondering why is Gus Hiddink famous? Why was he able to just walk in and win FA Cups with Chelsea, and what gave him this name? He was the manager of the PSV side that Ronald Koeman was in that won the most impressive of all trebles in the late 80s. Koeman, who then also went on to win the Euros that year with Holland, and also then scored the winner in the European Cup final for Barcelona in 1992, for anyone who's wondering why he just gets managerial job after managerial job without being able to fucking manage. These guys are figures of huge achievement within football. And then you have the famous Manchester United reaching the promised land, making history and claiming everything their hearts desired late in May in 1999 when Ali scored a goal in injury time. What a feeling. What a night. Because trebles made no sense. Very hard to do. Involves not just immense physical capabilities, but extreme psychological discipline by every single member of staff. The fucking physios have to be in on the bastard thing. There's Inter, 2010. There's Barca, 09. Bayern, 13. Barca, 15. Bayern, 20. And City, 2023. Six trebles in 13 years. Nearly one every two, as opposed to 4 and 56. So how do you think it matters? Money has made global super teams who are essentially unbeatable because they have a player in every whoring position better than the opposition's. I don't know why United fans are getting paranoid about losing the label of being the only English side to win the treble. It's not the same. The treble's won essentially every fucking year now, and there'll be many more in the next 10 years. City might do another one. And also the concept of holding on to a football club's history and hoping it doesn't happen is a very miserable way to support and live. But I suppose United fans have no really alternative option now due to the fact that the club's kind of finished. You're in an FA Cup final and you'd rather lose 5-0 than watch what happened because players weren't trying. You can say City are so good at keeping the ball, they're so good positionally. They know exactly what they're supposed to do. They knacker you, but I know for a fact if Wayne Rooney's 2-1 down and the opposition are playing frustrating football, he's putting his studs down the shin of the fullback by the corner flag around 87 minutes in, then spitting on the ground aggressively, swearing at the referee, spitting again, and then kind of walking back from the foul like a child as if he did nothing before going out for a brazzer and a curry that night. And Marcus Rashford was just walking around hoping that he didn't get a mark on his legs or stomach so it wouldn't damage his Instagram post from LA that he's going to put up with Jesse Lingard in 2 weeks. Whenever he's done pretending he's John Barnes against fucking North Macedonia. It's always been a great sport. It's good to watch. There's certain shapes the game takes. There's certain parts of the human makeup tested by the game that just makes for fascinating viewing. And it's always, as I said, been a great point of escapism for the working class. But the game is over. There's at this point no denying it. If we're denying the fact that football's over, we're just tuning out of reality. We're like the people who pretend to be shocked that Britney Spears is off her nut. Go and watch the video of Hit Me Baby One More Time when you're done listening to this. She's a sexualized schoolchild in cosplay. That is probably one of the most commonly used in the world, up in the school uniform, with her shirt fucking knotted like that chick who had the 40-year-old dad when you were growing up, and pigtails in her hair. It's one of the most sexual videos in the history of music. What age do you think she is there? Nope. What age do you think she is there? She's 16. So, she's shagging the air at 16 with men behind the camera saying, keep shagging the air, we'll make you a millionaire. You then shag the air for 10 to 20 years, become a millionaire. The whole thing filmed, by the way, and you're put in a relationship with like the NSYNC dude and all. And then eventually we're surprised that the woman in her, the independent individual within her, goes, it's weird, I've just kind of shagged the air, never had a choice in all of this. I'm a piece of shit. I'm a piece of dirt that was used for profit by other people, mainly to perform sexual acts on a microphone because I could not sing. Listen, there's a lot of queers listening to the show that are free Britney heads. I am too. But, guys, she was closer to a prostitute than she was Whitney Houston. Let's get real here. Couldn't sing. She could move. I mean, she could dance, but so can most strippers. She's not an overly... she's a talented performer because she had the bollocks to never shy away from a big gig and fucking do the Madonna stunt and all that. No one can take away Britney's fucking stones, but wasn't that talented. Was just a symbol of sex, and obviously and by her doing that and being used in that way, it accelerated the world we're in now, in which, I mean, it's just all sex now. Sex is the only thing fucking sold. Football coverage. That Kate Abdo, that Kate Abdo fucking Henri shit. 60% of viewers are imagining them boning. Sorry, 68% of viewers. Yeah. And if they're not imagining Thierry giving it a little bit of a foom, some of the weirdos out there are imagining Big Mix. I'm wondering, could she handle that bastard? And then the weirdest of us all, Monty Panesar, I'm not talking to you, are imagining Cara having a go over. But the point is that that's the fucking currency now. And yeah, people turn around and go, here, look at Friends. Courtney Cox, best looking brunette you could find. Phoebe, best looking hippie chick you could find, without question, by the way. If you're doubting that, you're lying. In fact, I'd have Phoebe probably ahead of the other two. I like her. I think she's been through a lot. And then you've Aniston, who's kind of the kind of simple guy's dream. They knew what they were doing. You look at the blokes then, you've kind of Joey Tribbiani, probably the best looking out of the dudes, but nothing that jumps off the page. And also the whole angle they had of him being obsessed with food, whilst he wasn't fat, was just poor writing. You've Chandler, who was just a junkie who was up and down weight for the whole thing, and David Schwimmer, who is a manky looking thing. So the sexualization of the women was the selling point of that show. We know it's been like that for years, but the culture now on the websites, then TikTok and fucking 15-year-olds getting their stomach out. You even see the odd like dad who was normal, whose daughter like wants him to get into a TikTok, and they think it's cute, and she's 8, and he's just dancing beside her, and he thinks, "Oh, listen, she wants to do it," but she's only warming up to get her belly button out, and then she'll get her arse cheeks out, only protecting the crack, and then now they're doing a thing where the lower tits out. Then she'll have so much money from the followers that you don't really care, so you're kind of whoring out your daughter to society. Ask Danny Dyer about that one. And then you will kind of not bat an eyelid when she moves on to OnlyFans, where she's actually now sucking dick for money. And we're doing it in the name of what? Feminism. It's their body, it's their choice. But at the end of the day, it's commercialization of the female body. And is that not what we were claiming was the problem with Norma Jean jumping out of the fucking cake and saying, "Happy birthday, Mr. President"? Is that not kind of the problem we had with the US soldiers raping every fucking woman in every Vietnamese village? It's the fact that it doesn't seem like it's about communism, that part of it. Just seems like it's fucking horny white males wanting a day out on the female canvas. And Am I the only guy who sees 14-year-olds riding their remote control on YouTube and these other fucking stupid websites thinking, yeah, the man in the office is counting his money because a woman's sticking a microphone up her arse. Yeah. That's what's happening. You see all these guys sitting in fucking TED Talks, how I found my billion-dollar tech startup. But at the end of the day, the product would have been used for shagging. Shagging comes into it somewhere. I also find it interesting that there's people asking the question of, will the Saudi League take over? Is it dangerous? Ruben Neves is going there. A few Chelsea players are going there. But no, the Saudi League isn't going to be the main fucking league. It's not going to become anything. But what it will do, it will accelerate Europe and England's need to sell more of its arse in order to keep up with it. So they'll need more money. And UEFA and FIFA and all that, they'll do that ahead of dying. So the Super League won't just come back, but it will kind of just be a case soon that 10 of the 38 Premier League games are played outside of England and shit. They'll be sitting there going, the Premier League's becoming such a big fucking product now because every dickhead in the world has FIFA and Twitter, that why would we waste this event by holding it in Bournemouth? They won't. So it'll be Bournemouth v Brighton in New York City. And more kind of individualized television rights in which you no longer have to stream. And by the time they make all games available, there's going to be such a production quality behind that that the city and the skyline and the commentary team and all that shit will just matter so much more, and pundits will become more and more American and be more like Big Meeks and Carragher, and the game will no longer be spoken about, but Jack Grealish's Barnett and ability to have a good time becomes news, and we ignore the fact that he gets 6 goals a season. Because, yeah, it's just fully entertainment now. Vince McMahon and those guys in the old school wrestling business were ahead of their time. We don't need them to really wrestle. Just have them pretend to fucking wrestle and get the crowds in. That's what boxing's doing now. And that's what football's doing now too. The players don't care about winning. They just show up, do a few funny interviews, get kind of too open about things like tapping teammates up in England camp. That's like a joke now. Luke Shaw, you tapping up any teammates this week? Yeah, you know a few. Back in the day, if you'd said to John Terry, John, you tapping up anyone? And he goes, hey, you know a few. Like Ashley Cole, the police would be in there in around fucking 2 seconds. It's gone now. It's just a bit of fun. Everyone's a bit of fun. So either start viewing the world as actually a bit of fun and stop talking about these issues as if they still matter, or go and get your own Swiss cave. There's another option, that's find fulfillment within yourself and surround yourself with the right people, but don't be losing that in politics as well. Do you remember that? Entertainment industry. Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney buying Wrexham for $2 million, and now fucking Hollywood will descend on the lower leagues, and fucking Mr. fucking Beesburger will own a fucking championship team, and they'll realise the content and the storytelling aspect to it actually exceeds trophy lifting in terms of like even the money that's possibly been made off, and we won't even have the best players playing. It'll be like fucking entertainers playing, and Jesus Christ, because that's what Grealish and Rashford are. Do you know what I mean? They're figures of narratives that are nothing got to do with football. And Marcus Rashford goes on good run of form for United this season for 3 months, and people were saying he's one of the informed players in the world, and then he takes 3 months off after it and no one comments on it, and he gets into the England team. It's all bullshit. But yeah, the MHR's back, I think. Going to take it in some new directions. Going to start really hunting down some guests that belong on this show. I think people know who those figures are as well. And I know I've never put the invites out to listeners or fans to suggest guests, but listen, it probably won't be acknowledged, but is it just Michael Anthony not acknowledging that because he's giving it the big? Do I need the listeners to kind of make this a community? Take myself out of it and evaporate. I'm just nothing but vocal cords and words that were already invented by human beings long before me. So actually, yeah. It's not about being cool with taking this level of pain. It's been cool with the fact that I don't need an identity because I don't exist. The listeners exist. And that's what the MA show is and always... and always fucking was. Right, so who he's getting on next? When's your next show? How are you growing this thing? Eric Cantona's one I dream of. I think I'm at that stage in life. I need to sit down with the king. I think I'm going to follow him to where he lives. Do a few weeks there. He lives in Lisboa, Portugal. I think I'm going to do a few weeks there. I think I'm going to search for the king. Or, yeah, I'll be, quite literally, as Ken Loach would put it, former guest, by the way, that's underrated, looking for Eric. Yeah, let's carry each other. And, yeah. No, I'm excited. In fairness, yes. Fair play, it is. Appreciate you for tuning in. Give it a Spotify rating. And any of the fucking dickheads who have loads of fucking irrelevant followers who were told that whatever they're putting out, regardless of what it is good by a fucking algorithm who fucking listen to every single MA show and view it as some kind of like indie phenomenon. Do more to promote it or get your fucking ears out of mine, my listener space. You fuck yourself while you're at it. Alright, come on, here we go. Season 2, so to speak. MA show.
It's been how many years, my boy?
Not audiobooks, David. Sure, then
you still don't know my tears of joy. No need to go, just take
Radio
it cast. Slow.
Podcast.
And have you heard the Michael Anthony Show? Makes me feel just fine.
What's it help to see?
Makes me see the light.
What about those tears?
Believe my eyes.
How's it make it feel?
Makes me feel alright.